you can tell a lot about a person by how they drive, right? Your basic personality is revealed in who you are behind the wheel. And this is especially true when somebody cuts you off, you know, causing you to swerve and pound on the horn. And as you go by them, you yell at them, you know, "You stupid idiot, where did you learn how to drive? Did you get your license out of a Cracker Jack box?" It's not like they can hear us, right? I mean, what do we expect? That they're going to send us a check with a little note of apology? But we still have to make our disapproval known. And some of you are even more, let's just say, animated and verbose than that. But we've got to keep this, you know, Sunday sermon appropriate. And then others of you are even more creative in the way that you show your disapproval. After you swerve to miss him, you position yourself in the next lane so that you come to a stop at the red light right next to him, right? And then you roll down the window and you slowly turn and you give them that disapproving glare to show him what an inconsiderate jerk he is. And then when the light turns green, you hit the gas and you get in front of him, you move over, and then you slow way down. Well, there are two guys. They never drove a car, but if they did, I know exactly what kind of drivers they would be. All right, they would be like Dale Earnhardt behind the wheel. They would let nothing get in their way because they had places to go and they weren't going to let anyone slow them down. And woe be to anyone who tried. I'm talking about two brothers. Their names were James and John. They were both apostles. Now, James and John are what we would call driven personalities, driven to succeed, driven to achieve, driven to the top. These guys were high achievers. They were highly motivated and they didn't back down to obstacles. Now, from a certain point of view, you can see exactly why Jesus wanted these guys on his team, these two sons of Zebedee, because he needed some good, hard-charging go-getters to help start the church. And James and John certainly fit that bill. And they were a part of Jesus' inner circle, that select group that shared his most intimate and intense moments with him. And they would become a part of what Paul calls in Galatians 2:9, the pillars of the church. But James and John weren't the perfect pair either. In their pursuit of achievement, they were often selfish. They loved the spotlight. They were highly competitive. And they could get quite angry when someone got in their way. I think in many ways, James and John are the perfect apostles to speak to 21st century America, because they would fit right in with modern life, right? These two guys could run the rat race. They could climb the corporate ladder and they could post angry tweets and irate memes with the best of them. And we live today with such a pressure to perform. Our culture places a high value on all of the external trappings of success, right? Busyness has become a virtue. Just listen to the conversations that happen in your break room or around the water cooler, or even while you're having coffee and donuts at church. And listen to how often people will talk about how early they have to get up or how late they stayed at work, right? Now, driven people like James and John thrive on all of this pressure and competition, all right? But they often do so like wrecking balls, you know, crushing people in their path and neglecting their inner lives and forgetting, well, some of the more subtle yet important parts of life. And these people can burn out. And ours is a stressed out world. I was reading part of this book by Jeffrey Pfeffer called Dying for a Paycheck, talking about work-related stress. And here were some interesting takeaways, right? Job stress is far away the most major source of stress for American adults, right? And it has been rising precipitously in recent decades. Right? 80% of us that work report feeling large amounts of stress on the job. In fact, 25% of employees view their jobs as the major stress factor in their lives. And it's associated with more health concerns and health problems than any other stressor, right? Including financial problems and family problems, which used to be kind of the two big ones. But those are just some of the costs, right? The greatest cost is spiritual. You see, this isn't just a business problem or a work problem. It isn't just a family problem, right? It's a church problem. It's a spiritual problem. It's a problem with our relationship with God. Now, how can a driven person, a person like a James or a John, develop a Christ-like character? Now, let me say this. I believe that to an extent, our basic personalities are part of who God created us to be. Now, that means it's something that's hardwired into us. Now, it's also true that gets shaped and directed by a lot of other influences along the way, your family, your education, and other life experiences. But, and this is key, your personality shouldn't dictate your character. In fact, it should be the other way around. Years ago, Gordon MacDonald wrote a wonderful book called Ordering Your Private World. And in that book, he talks about some of the basic traits of the driven personality. And we can see a lot of these things in James and John. But number one, and as we go through these, see if these things are true of your life. See if you are a James or a John. Number one, driven people are most gratified by accomplishment, right? Achievement is what floats their boat, right? The big contract, the promotion, scoring the big job, they are always looking for more trophies to put in their case. And if they can't find this achievement for themselves, if they're parents, they often seek it vicariously through their children. Number two, driven people are preoccupied with the symbols of success, especially in a culture that says success drives this, wears that, eats here, buys this, has this certain hairstyle, right? And these can be different things in different places, right? In a big city, it might be driving a Mercedes. Around here, it's more likely to be, you know, a jacked up extended cab F-250 4x4. But if it's important to you that you have a certain image, that people think of you a certain way, especially so that they'll think of you as accomplished or successful, right, then you might have a driven personality. Number three, driven people are usually caught in the uncontrolled pursuit of expansion. Right? Their motto is more. Driven people have a hard time being content with where they are and with what they have. Now, let me be clear about this. There is nothing wrong with having dreams and desires and goals, right? But when those things become so all-consuming that you can't enjoy where you're at in life or you can't appreciate what you have, then that uncontrolled pursuit has become an idol, right? And you can see this in James and John. This is especially apparent in Mark chapter 10, verses 35 through 40. They come to Jesus with a certain request. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Remember when you were a kid, you know, and somebody would say, I want you to promise me something. And you would say, what? And they would say, well, you have to promise first. No. So here's what Jesus says. What do you want me to do for you? He asked. They replied, well, let one of us sit at your right hand and the other at your left in your glory. You don't know what you are asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? Oh, we can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or my left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared. Now, number four, driven people tend to be highly competitive. Right? They view all of life as a competition. Everything is either winning or losing. Right? Did they score a better deal on their new shoes than their best friend? Did they get a better score on their test? Did their kids score more points in the game? Did they pick the shortest and fastest checkout line at Walmart? Did they make a better time on their trip than what the Google Maps estimate was? Now, on a couple of occasions, Jesus had to rebuke his disciples for arguing about who would be the greatest in the kingdom. And I have no doubt that James and John were at the center of these arguments because their plain goal and intention was to be the greatest. There's another incident in Mark 9, 38 through 41 that shows their highly competitive nature. Teacher, said John, we saw a man driving out demons in your name, and we told him to stop because he was not one of us. Right? We don't know that guy. We don't know who he is. And so they viewed him as competition. He was a threat. Do not stop him, Jesus said. No one who does a miracle in my name can in the next moment say anything bad about me. For whoever is not against us is for us. Right? There are other people out there that are on the same team. Right? You see, driven people tend to look at other people as threats, as someone who will take their achievement or their accomplishment away. And when you put this kind of attitude in a church, it can be very divisive and very destructive. And it really poisons a church's ability to minister. Number five, driven people often possess a volcanic force of anger. This is certainly true of James and John. Jesus even had a nickname for these two. In Mark 3:17, Jesus calls them sons of thunder. Right? He didn't give them this name because of their interest in the weather. Driven people are so focused on moving on ahead that anything that slows them down or gets in their way, it really perturbs them. And when these volcanoes erupt in the church, when someone feels that their vision or their agenda is being threatened, well, it causes real problems. And this leads us right into the next point, number six. Driven people often possess limited or undeveloped people skills. If you want to see bad people skills in action, look no further than James and John. For instance, there's this story in Luke 9, 51 through 56. As the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. He sent messengers on ahead who went into a Samaritan village to get things ready for him. But the people there did not welcome him because he was heading for Jerusalem. All right, so they're up in Galilee, up in the north, and they're heading south towards Jerusalem. It's time for Jesus' arrest and death and crucifixion and resurrection. So on the way, they're passing through Samaria, and Jesus is kind of setting the stage for one last, you know, sort of missionary outreach to these villages. Well, there's one village that wants nothing to do with them because as Samaritans, they don't believe in worshiping in Jerusalem. And since that's where they're going to worship, well, they want nothing to do with Jesus. Right? Deeply held racial and religious prejudices here. Well, here's what happens. When the disciples, James and John, saw this, they asked, Lord, Do you want us to call down fire from heaven to destroy them? I mean, they want to bring down hellfire and brimstone because these people don't want Jesus in their town. But Jesus turned and rebuked them, and they went to another village. Driven people can be very good at getting things done, right? They can have, though, a hard time working with others. They get impatient, right? They have a hard time seeing things through their eyes. And sometimes other people who have to work with these driven personalities often feel intimidated by them. So does this mean that driven people aren't good Christians, that they aren't very spiritual, that they really don't have a place in the church? Absolutely not. Right? Here's the thing. Any kind of personality, whether it's driven or anything else, has positive as well as negative qualities, all right? There's a good side of the coin and there's the flip side of the coin. And anyone's traits, no matter what they are, can be used to either serve themselves or to serve God and others. And we see in all of the disciples, and that's one of the reasons why we're looking at these 12 ordinary men, all right, that there's a variety of personalities. Right? And they all have a role. They all have a place. They all have strengths that they bring to the table. But they also are sinful men. They're selfish men. They all have flaws and issues. And yet Jesus transforms them from being sinful, selfish people into Christ-like, kingdom-minded servants. Right? And the driven personality is no different. Jesus could do this with James and John. And if you're like a James or John, Jesus can do this with you. So let me give you just kind of three guidelines to help you develop a Christ-like character, even if you are a James or a John. Number one, learn to use your competitive tendencies to build God's kingdom rather than your own. Build God's kingdom rather than your own. Well, there can be a lot of tension for those of us who want to live like Christians, but have a highly competitive nature. But Jesus showed us that these qualities can be used for good. Right? He showed us how you could lead while serving. He showed how you could achieve, but with new standards of success. He showed how you could progress, but according to God's calendar, not our own. God doesn't mind the pursuit of rewards or accomplishment, all right? God's not against, doing something for what you get out of it as long as you seek the right rewards. God promises many rewards and blessings for those who serve him. All right, Paul writes this in Colossians chapter 3, 23 and 24. Whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive, here it is, you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Right? So yeah, pursue rewards, pursue success and achievement and accomplishment. Just make sure it's the right success. It's the right rewards. Right, seek to accumulate the fruit of the Spirit and not just the fruit of worldly success. Seek the treasures of heaven and not merely the trinkets of earth. And if you are highly competitive, if you are a James or a John, you would do well also to remember who the enemy is. Right? Remember who the competition is. The competition isn't other people. The competition aren't those who disagree with you or who have a different idea or a different agenda. Right? The enemy is Satan and the forces of evil. The enemy is the lure of temptation. The enemy are those things that lead people down the wide road that leads to destruction. I have read, and I've tried to either confirm or deny this story, and I can do neither, so I'm still going to use it because it sounds good. But I have read that horses, or at least certain breeds of thoroughbred horses, that when they are threatened with an enemy, that they will face each other and kick outward at the enemy. But that when donkeys are threatened by an enemy, they will face outward toward the enemy and kick each other. Which do you think the church is more like? Sometimes people with the most competitive, driven personalities are also suspicious or even fearful of Christianity because they have this mistaken notion of faith. They think that becoming a Christian, that following Jesus means becoming a doormat, right? But becoming a Christian, following Jesus, doesn't mean that you sacrifice excellence or achievement or success. It just means that those things are refocused on a much higher level. And James and John are the perfect examples of this, right? Jesus calls even the most driven, most competitive, high achievers. And if you're someone who's been kind of keeping God at arm's length because you don't think you fit in, that you don't think you belong, think again, right? Because Jesus took James and John, these two ruthlessly competitive brothers, and he transformed them into the core of his team of apostles. James, well, when you talk about the legacy of James, it's interesting because James was the first of the disciples to die for his faith. He's killed by King Herod at the beginning of Acts chapter 12. And he finds that this pleases the Jewish religious leaders. So this leads to some more persecution for the church. And by the end of chapter 12, we read about Herod. He's giving a speech, and it's a very good speech, apparently, because the people start praising him. Oh, this isn't the voice of a man speaking. This is the voice of a God. And apparently, instead of deflecting the praise and giving God the credit, Herod is like, he's soaking it all in. He's loving it. And here's what happens in verse 23. Immediately, an angel of God, of the Lord struck him down because he did not give God the glory. And he was eaten by worms and breathed his last. But verse 24 says, but the word of God increased and multiplied. And this happened to time out perfectly with the return of Paul and Barnabas on the first missionary journey. And it was a real time of blessing and growth from the church. And so God is able to use even the death of James for great success. And then there's John. John, unlike his brother, lived the longest of all of the disciples. He would go on to write one of the most beloved of the Gospels, the fourth Gospel, the Gospel of John. He would write three just beautiful letters and also record the intriguing and vivid visions of the book of Revelation. And all of these together are some of the finest works ever put into human language. The greatest success in the world is not what you can achieve for yourself. It is the success that God gives you. In James chapter 4, verse 10, we read, humble yourselves before the Lord, and he, God, will lift you up. All right, so you can work, and you can strive, and you can scratch, and you can claw, and you can climb your way to the top of whatever heap you're trying to get to the top of, or you can let him lift you to only where he can take you. Number two, learn to serve the needs of others, not just your own desires. Learn to serve the needs of others and not just your own desires. This is one of the most important lessons that Jesus would teach James and John, and it can be one of the hardest lessons for us to learn. Now, we saw earlier how James and John were trying to secure for themselves the two most important positions in the kingdom. Well, listen to what happens next in Mark chapter 10. This is verses 41 through about 43 here. When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Of course they did. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant." This would be a lesson that they would learn. I mean, I already mentioned James is killed because he followed Jesus. And John, in his writings, becomes known as the apostle of love. He mentions love nearly 70 times in his three books, including 35 times in just 1 John alone. But listen to what John says in 1 John chapter 4, verses 7 through 12. "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us." Doesn't sound like one of the sons of thunder, does it? Doesn't sound like an angry man shooting for the top and that would let no one else get in his way. Number three, and this isn't so much something for you to do as it is something for you to realize, and that is this. Your family background is not an irrevocable mold for your life. Right? Your family background is not an irrevocable mold for your life. Whether you are born with it or it's the way that you were raised, many of us were taught very early in life to be ruthless competitors, right? And we certainly see the influence of James and John's mom in their life. In Matthew 20, we learn it was their mom who was primarily behind this this quest to get the two most important positions in the kingdom. Mom led that charge. And there are many indications that James and John's parents were wealthy and influential. Their father Zebedee was a powerful man. The night that Jesus was arrested, John, if you remember, was able to enter into the courtyard of the high priest, all right? That's how he was there to deny Jesus three times. You remember that Jesus even sees Peter. There's this encounter there, all right? But at the same time, Peter was locked outside. He couldn't come in, all right? Only members of wealthy and influential families had that kind of access. James and John inherited many things from their parents, right? They were uninhibited, bold, confident, and motivated, right? But they were also brazen, selfish, and short-tempered. But this wasn't an unchangeable mold that forever shaped their identity and who they were, all right? Well, this is just who I am. This is just the way I was born. This is how I was raised. I'm sorry, I can't help it. All right, that was never an excuse for James and John. And it isn't an excuse for you. If he can transform their lives, he can transform yours too. Even if you were raised to be highly competitive and to be ruthless in your pursuit of accomplishment, right? Maybe you would bring home a report card full of A's, right? And then you would get chewed out because of the one B. Maybe you went 2 for 4 in your little league game, right? You drove in 3 runs, but still your dad is angry with you because of the one strikeout. Was nothing ever good enough growing up in your life, right? Well, Jesus can pave a new path for your life. Don't let your upbringing be an excuse for not growing spiritually, for not becoming who God has called you to be, you can begin to break that mold right now. Just with these three things that I've talked about here. If you are a driven person, if you are a James or a John, these are three steps that you can begin to take in your life right now. All right? And you can begin to do that. And if you need somebody to kind of walk with you through this or talk to about it to kind of make your decision formal, well, then give me a call or shoot me an email or a text message. I would love to do that. Because Jesus, he can change your life too, even if you are a highly driven person. Thank you for watching, and God bless.